Welcome to the Christian Romance Book Club podcast, powered by FamilyFiction.com and hosted by Erica Rodriguez Well. This show is for readers of all types of Christian romance fiction. Tune in every episode for updates and author interviews. Whether you love contemporary romance, romantic suspense, historical romance, or Amish romance. Want to talk Christian romance in between episodes? Join our private book club group on Facebook and visit our website at FamilyFiction.com. Join our family at Patreon.com/FamilyFiction and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And now for your host, Erica Rodriguez Well.
Welcome to the Christian Romance Book Club podcast. I'm Erica Rodriguez Well. Normally, right about now, I'd be telling you about this month's featured book. However, since you're listening to one of our pilot episodes, I'll use this time to tell you a bit about what to expect on this show. There are four types of Christian romance that we cover: contemporary romance, romantic suspense, historical romance, and Amish romance. Our goal is to rotate among these four types. In any given episode, we might hit upon three different types of romance stories. On each episode, I'll be telling you about that month's featured book and possibly an alternate featured selection. I'll also tell you about that episode's sponsor, and then we'll have an author interview or discussion of Christian romance fiction. Join our private Facebook group and be sure to stop by to let us know how you think we're doing. When we come back, I'll be talking with Amish romance author Wanda E. Brunstetter.
This spot is where sponsored books are going to be mentioned. Are you an author or publisher? Do you wish I was talking about your book right now? Find out how to sponsor an episode of the Christian Romance Book Club podcast by emailing ross@familyfiction.com.
And now my interview with Wanda E. Brunstetter.
Thank you, Ms. Brunstetter, for joining us here at the Family Fiction Christian Romance podcast. It's such a pleasure to have you here with us. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure to be with you.
I wanted to ask you about your latest series, the Amish Greenhouse Mysteries. Are you a fan of mysteries? I was curious. Did you set out to write a mystery when you started this series?
I did when I first started it. It was actually at my publisher's request. They said, why don't you write another mystery? Because I hadn't written one for several years. I have two other ones that were labeled mysteries, but it's been a while. So they said, why don't you write another mystery? And then somebody on the team at Barber Publishing said, why don't you write something about a greenhouse too? Well, my series previous to this had a greenhouse in it. It was called the Prayer Jar series, and people loved that series and wanted me to write more. And usually my publisher says, keep it to three. Then when we put it in a trilogy, it'll work well. So that was the end of that series. But I thought, what if this, I made like a spin-off from that first series, because there was a couple who ran a greenhouse in that series. They were minor characters. But nonetheless, part of the people from the first series could make an appearance in this series. And I knew my readers would really like that. And they said yes. So that's how it started.
Oh, sweet. So it's your readers will recognize the couple that you're revisiting.
They will. And the children, one child in particular, who's an adult now, he played a pretty big role in the first series, and he's got a minor role, but I don't know how to say this. It's minor, but major, if that makes sense. He's not actually in all the scenes because he's moved to New York, but his mother is the one who's running the greenhouse. So at the beginning of the story, I have a very serious thing happen. She loses her husband, her second oldest son, and her son-in-law all in one accident. So she and her daughters are left to run the greenhouse. So it's very dramatic and kind of sad. A lot of people said they had to have a box of Kleenex for the first few chapters. Yeah. But basically the story goes on to tell about the family, her and her daughters, and how they're running the greenhouse and how they're coping with the things that are happening to them that they didn't expect would ever happen. Therein lies the mystery.
It's a heartbreaking start to the story. Did anything in particular inspire that part of the story that it should deal with so much heartbreak?
Yeah, I mean, my husband and I know a lot of Amish people. We're very good friends with many Amish. And some of the stories they tell me that are not stories, they're true. The tragedies that have occurred either in their own families or among the Amish in their community just tug at my heartstrings. And I know many times an entire family has been killed in buggy accidents. For sure, a lot of them have been injured. I don't think there's an Amish family out there who haven't been touched by a buggy accident. We were riding in an Amish buggy with friends one time and almost got hit by a semi. So we know how dangerous it can be. And so I think I wanted to let the readers know this buggy accident thing is real. And also I wanted to let them know how the Amish cope with a great loss like this.
I don't think that that's something that we think about. We see those beautiful idyllic pictures of buggies on small roads, mm-hmm. but we never think of the huge vehicles that will share them on larger roads. What is it that ties the Greenhouse Mysteries series together as a whole? Because you're focusing on the family.
Well, soon after the accident, and they start trying to figure out how are we gonna support ourselves with this greenhouse. Was just there was just Melinda and her two daughters, Amy and Sylvia. And the second book that we're talking about today is Sylvia. Primarily, it focuses on her and then her teenage son. So they're trying to figure out how we're going to do this. And then in the midst of it, someone starts vandalizing their place, and they never know when the vandal's going to hit. It can be a month or two might go by, might be within a day or two. Then they start getting some threatening phone calls, muffled voice phone calls left on their messaging, asking them to leave, to sell out and leave. And so the son in particularly is really affected by this. For one thing, he's having a hard time accepting his father and brother's death. But the other thing is he wants to figure out who's doing these attacks. And I go into this more heavily in book 3, which I'm currently writing right now. He is determined to discover who. So he has a list of suspects. And the list of suspects sort of starts off in book 1, and in book 2, it's brought up again. And in book 3, he's really getting serious now. He's seriously trying to figure out which of these. He's just sure that one of the people on this list is the one who's been doing it.
So he becomes the amateur sleuth.
Yeah.
Oh, how exciting. Oh, wow. That must be so. He's a teenager at this point?
Yeah, he was 15 when his father died.
That's exciting and sad for that young man. It's really scary to lose everything emotionally. And then this is a very interesting development that he becomes a detective. In your second book, in The Mockingbird Song, you're focusing on Sylvia. Who's his mom? Is that
Sylvia is the oldest sister.
Okay.
And she's the one who, she had such a hard time in book 1 accepting her husband's death, because it was her father, her brother, and her husband. And she's left with two small children to raise. And she couldn't even go out into the greenhouse and work. She didn't even want to be around people. She kind of became a little bit agoraphobic. Just wanted to stay in the house and be with her kids and just try to come to grips with this. Well, in book 2, it's more focused on Sylvia. Book 1 was focused on her younger sister, Amy, who basically broke her engagement to the man she had been dating a while so that she could help her mom in the greenhouse. She was the strong one, Amy was. And now it's Sylvia's turn. And Sylvia's convinced that she will never be able to function normally, never be able to have a relationship with another man. And then she meets Dennis. And Dennis is new to the area, and he's a bird watcher. So I delve into bird watching a bit in this. That's what the titles of the books all have bird in them. That was so much fun because I'm a bird watcher myself. So I really have enjoyed doing that.
Oh, how beautiful. That's really fun.
So when Sylvia meets Dennis, they have kind of a friendship at first. And her brother has been bird watching. He started bird watching in the first book, The Crow's Call, tried to make a pet out of a crow. And so she and her brother are out bird watching, and they run into Dennis. And so they kind of strike up a friendship, and this friendship starts to grow. And then her mother tries to put the brakes on it. She doesn't think that Sylvia is ready for a relationship. She doesn't know this man, who is this strange man that's moved to the area. She tries to break it up, basically. Mm-hmm. So this is really Sylvia's journey, this story, even though all this other stuff is going on, more attacks. Amy and Jared get married. The mother continues to cope. The mother's a very strong woman, very determined woman to make a success of the greenhouse that she and her husband had started. So there's kind of some side stories going on within the story of each of the characters and dealing with all this in their own way.
It's a lot of emotional change to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
What spiritual themes did you want to explore?
Well, forgiveness plays a big role in this, but also in acceptance. The characters have all struggled with accepting what's happened to their loved ones. Especially Henry, the teenage boy, it's affected their faith in God. It's, you know, God doesn't walk away from us. We walk away from him. And that's kind of the way he's at. And Sylvia was there too for quite a long time. Just felt like God had abandoned them. Why did you allow this to happen? Asking a lot of questions. So it's a faith building story. Also dealt with the topic of fear and how, God doesn't want us to live in fear. He wants us to live in faith. And so that's what Sylvia learns in this story.
A lot of intense growth. Out of your characters, you have an entire family to choose from. Did any of them wind up surprising you as you wrote out their story and wrote out the storyline?
Yeah, that happens to me all the time. It's been happening to me in the third book that I'm close to finishing. Like, my characters are taking over. You feel like you gotta pull back on the reins a little bit sometimes, because they do. Once you get into a story, and each character, when you're writing in their point of view, you are that character. You become that character, and it just happens. And that happened to me quite a bit. I have a very colorful character in the book. She plays a minor role. She's a neighbor across the street. From them, she's English, she's not Amish, and she doesn't understand the Amish way at all. And she's very disapproving of everything they do. And so she's really developed through this series, and she's quite the character. I kind of think about, remember I Love Lucy?
Yes.
Lucille Ball. Well, she's kind of a Lucille Ball kind of a person. So she adds some humor to the story, and the story needs some humor because it's so intense.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Did you wind up with any favorite character as you did the series? Are you still in the middle of three, actually? It's not a fair question.
I have a favorite for each one. I think Amy was my favorite for the first one, which was The Crow's Call, because she was such a strong person and so determined to do what was right for her family. But in book two, I really like Dennis. Because he has a special way about him, and he won Amy's heart. I mean, not Amy, excuse me, Sylvia. He won her heart, and that was a difficult thing to do, as much as she was hurting. And his interest in birds is fascinating. He's very knowledgeable. They have what they call a birding phone number that you can call and listen to other people, what they've sighted. Maybe they've seen this or they've seen that, unusual birds in the area. And so I bring that in. It was just a fun topic to deal with. And I think Dennis sort of brought it to life. He's also a horse trainer. So he trains horses to pull buggies. So he's a very interesting character.
Oh, that's fun. He's very, very much an animal lover. And,
yes.
And the kindness that needs to happen with being able to be gentle enough to care for animals.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
That's sweet. What would you like for your readers to take away after they read The Mockingbird Song?
I think the fact that, as I said previously, when we feel God is not there for us, it's usually because we are not keeping close enough to him. We pull away. Sometimes we try to hide our emotions. We may not want to share with others. That's a part of our healing. And I think I'm trying to show the reader that it's okay to grieve, but we need to reach out to others for help during our time of despair, and especially reach out to God in prayer and in Bible study as well.
Definitely.
Because, you know, things look dark And there's always that light at the end of the tunnel, and God has a way to protect us and to care for us, and we just need to keep that in mind. I've shared that many times in my blogs lately with my readers, because we're all going through a difficult time right now. Yes. And we have to keep our focus on God and not allow our faith to be diminished in any way. And it's difficult, but that's why it's important that we reach out to one another, I think.
Absolutely. He will give us the strength to stand.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, amen. I'd like to pull back out to more general, now that we've talked about the book in specific. I would really love to ask you, since we have this opportunity with the podcast, about when you first started writing. What was your motivation? How did you start?
Actually, I started writing when I was a child. I grew up in a very dysfunctional home. It was difficult for me to even talk about that for a while, but I'm at that point where I realize a lot of people have grown up in dysfunctional homes, and they need to hear that other people have and can relate. And because of that, I pulled inward quite a bit myself as a child. And so in order to express my feelings, which I couldn't say, if I said what I felt, I usually was in trouble for it. So I wrote. At a very young age, I started writing poetry. And my school teacher in second grade saw one of the poems that I'd written. It was about a moth, of all things. I didn't even like moths, but I wrote a poem about a moth. And she saw something in that. And she pulled me up to her desk after school one day. And she said, I like your poem. And I think someday you're going to become an author. So she just planted that little seed in my head. And I hung on to that, even though I had no clue how that could ever happen or if it ever would. So, and I wrote a lot of little puppet plays and plays for our youth group that we actually put on at our church. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people said, wow, you know, those are really good. You have talent. But I was very insecure. And I thought, they're just saying that because they're nice people and they're church people. They have to say nice things. It didn't really dawn on me that I had any talent at all. Then I kind of set all my desire to write aside when I got married and had children, until I started doing volunteer work at their school, at their grade school. And I volunteered in the library, and I was reading to children. And boy, it just brought back that desire to write again. And about that time, just shortly after, actually, my mom called me one day and she said, I have a favor to ask. I just started a new job in the school system, and I also just signed up for a writing class. I'm not going to have time to take it, and it's totally paid for. Would you want to take the class?
Wow.
It was a correspondence course. It was with the Institute of Children's Literature. I said, yeah, of course I want to take it. So I took the class, and I felt like a butterfly who'd been let out of the cocoon. I just thought, this is where it's at. This is what I want to do. This is my ministry. I want it to be, let's say that. So I got through the course, and I started sending out short stories and articles and poems and puppet plays to various Christian publications. And I sold my first one right out the door, practically. I think I made $15 on that first story, and it was like $1,500 to me, because to know that somebody thought that something I had written was worth reading, buying, publishing, I was in awe of that. And so from that point on, I began writing more and more and more. And I probably sold through 400 articles and stories before it dawned on me that I really wanted to write books. So okay. I took another writing course. And this one, of course, I paid for myself. Mm-hmm. Got through that. Thought I was going to write for kids. But I don't know even why exactly I decided I would try writing fiction for women. With a little romance. And my husband grew up in a Mennonite church, and he had a friend who knew some Amish people. And I had always been fascinated with the Amish way of life. I had never met any Amish up close and personal until my husband's friend took us to Lancaster County to meet this couple. And this was early into my writing. I had not actually written a novel at this point. I was still writing stories. When I met this Amish couple, and got to know them in the time we were there visiting, I realized these people are really not that different from us. They dress different, they live a different lifestyle, but in here and with the things they deal with, they're not that different from us. And I thought, I would like my readers to know the Amish and to love them, because I felt I was drawn to them, like we had a bond. And so I told my husband on the way home that day, when I write my first novel, it's going to be about the Amish. And it was. My first novel was called A Merry Heart, and I sent it to Barber Publishing. They had a book club called Heart Song Presents, and they bought it. And I was a new author. I had never written any books. I had only written all these stories, which showed them that I could write. But could I write a novel? They took a chance. And the readers loved it. The book club readers would send in notes to the publisher, and they loved A Merry Heart. Wow. They loved the fact that it was Amish. And so they said, can you write more? Which I did. I wrote several more Amish-themed novels. There were like 55,000 words, so they're about half the size of my novels now. And then I wrote some contemporary and some historical as well. So then Barber Publishing decided to break out into the trade fiction line, and they asked all the Heart Song authors if they would want to submit something. So I did, and of course it was an Amish theme. It was called The Storekeeper's Daughter. It went with three books. And that was actually my first mystery. It was the kidnapping of an Amish child. And that carried on into the three books. So that a couple of years ago, they made it into a musical play. The Blue Gate Musicals did. Oh. And it played in, I think, four different states.
Oh, wow. Out of the mystery.
Yeah, just a couple of years ago, they took it. But before that, they had done one of my other books into a musical. So I've had two books turned into musical plays. But this one in particular, I'm very fond of because it was my first trade fiction and it went on the bestseller list the first month it was out.
Oh, that's such motivation. How exciting.
Yeah, for me and my publisher.
Yes, that's lovely.
Yeah, so, and I've been with Barber Publishing for over 20 years.
That's wonderful. That's
writing primarily Amish fiction because that's where my heart lies. Because from the time I wrote my first novel, I started, I don't know how or why, but everywhere we went, the Amish would come to me and say, wow, you're writing about us so accurately. We really appreciate that. And we started getting invitations into their homes for dinner, to spend the night, to spend a week, to go to weddings, to go to church with them. And so we started getting Amish friends everywhere that we would travel in Amish communities. So anytime I have a specific setting, which I kind of hop around. I'm not just in Lancaster County. I'm in Ohio. I'm in Indiana. I'm in Illinois. I have Amish friends in those communities. And that's how I am able to write about them accurately because I have gotten to know them so well.
What a blessing. That's so sweet.
Spending time with them is the key.
Absolutely. What do you think it is about Amish life that is so attractive to the readers?
I think it's because they have a more slowed down pace than us. In the respect of what they do, but you know, they're really busy people. They're not just, oh, laid back, I'm on the porch, rocking in a chair kind of people. They're always on the go and busy and doing and going. But it's the fact that their priorities are so much different than ours. It's not about, you know, the latest hairstyle, the latest clothing style, makeup, competing with one another for the best. It's about helping one another, about loving one another, and it's about family. They are so family-oriented, and I really appreciate that.
It's encouraging to see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. They're always there for one another, and they're there for their friends and people that they don't even know. They will drop things and go help somebody in need. Some of them have gone when they've had bad hurricanes or tornado hit one time in Indiana in a certain area called Napanee, and the Amish from about a couple hours away all gathered up. They hire drivers, of course. They don't ride in the horse and buggies a distance. And went down to help rebuild. And that's how they are. They didn't know the people personally, but that's how they are. They want to help.
That It's that community, that deep sense of community.
Yeah, basically the Amish live their faith. They don't just talk the talk, they walk the walk.
How does your faith influence your writing?
Oh, if I didn't have my faith in God, which I became a Christian at a very young age, that's what got me through the dysfunctional childhood and even carried on into my adult life, still dealing with my parents and their dysfunctional ways. Without Christ, I could not have made it. And I really feel that because of what I've gone through, I'm able to pour that into my characters and my readers feel it. And I get so many emails from people, or I meet them face to face at book signings, where they tell me something that I wrote in one of my books helped them through a difficult time. Some people have found the Lord because of what I've written. One woman was a practicing witch, and she had read one of my books out of curiosity and found the Lord. It turned her whole life around. And when I hear things like that, I know that God has his hand on me and my writing, and that he will see me through. And I pray over every one of my books before I even start writing, that God will give me the words to help someone, even if it's one person, through a difficult time or to change their life in some positive way.
It's such a blessing to do it and see it as a ministry, really.
It is my ministry. And I didn't know it for sure when I first started, other than that I knew, I felt like I was doing what God wanted me to do. And he was giving me the scriptures that I needed and directing me to what to write about. But I didn't realize how much of an impact it was having on people's lives. And I feel very humbled because, believe me, in my own strength, I could not do any of it. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me.
Amen. Amen. Oh, Ms. Brunstetter, I have to take this opportunity to ask you, because you mentioned earlier that you were writing puppet shows when you were young, when you were first starting your writing. Is that how you segued into the ventriloquism?
Because Yes. My husband and I started a puppet ministry within our local church. They wanted something a little, he became Sunday school superintendent at that time. They wanted something different to bring in the neighborhood kids. So we started a puppet ministry. And I had been interested in puppets since I was a kid. So we did that. And he plays the guitar and sings. And he started doing those twisty animal balloons just to add more. The kids were so excited for all this new things happening. And I thought, wow, it'd be fun to add ventriloquism. So I went to the Christian bookstore one day and I bought a book. It was called You Can Be a Ventriloquist. And I brought it home and I showed it to my son. He was probably 12 about the time. And I said, hey, why don't you study up on this and learn to do it? He said, I don't want to do that, Mom. He said, why don't you do it? And I thought, yeah, why not? I've always been interested in this. Why not? So I got a real cheap little puppet and I would sit in front of a full-length mirror in our bedroom and practice. I did this about 6 months. And finally, I got the courage to try it in front of an audience, and they loved it. And they said, oh, wow, Wanda, your lips didn't move. I'm like, wow, this is awesome. This is fun. And so I have several puppets now, and I have a full-sized ventriloquist figure named Randy Wright. He's very big. He's about the size of a maybe 3-year-old child. So he can be a little intimidating sometimes to smaller kids, but most people really love him.
Wow. So you take them, you still take them with you?
I do. I don't take them everywhere, but I've been on our local Christian broadcasting station with him 3 times in the last year.
That's so great.
The audience love him. They keep asking me to come back. Sometimes when I'm doing a speaking engagement, I'll take him just for fun. It kind of breaks the ice with the audience, gives them a good laugh because Randy's always saying things that are funny. So I think having him has, and having the ventriloquism and the puppets, helped me develop a humorous side of myself that I didn't know was there, because I grew up in such a serious circumstances in our home. My favorite scripture is, a merry heart doeth good like a medicine, and a broken spirit drieth the bones. I realize that we all need humor. I don't care how sad our situation is or what we're going through, we need to look for something that's positive and humorous.
That's a beautiful way to heal, really.
Yes, yes. Yeah, they say laughter is good medicine, and that there's a reason for that.
What is your favorite way for your readers to keep in contact with you? Do you have a best way that you like to keep in contact with your readers?
They can touch with me? Well, yeah. Through email, of course. I get a lot of emails, which is wanda@wandabrunstetter.com. They can email me there. They can also contact me via my website. There's a place to click on to contact Wanda. You can find me on Facebook. I have several places on Facebook. Primarily, I have my Wanda E. Brunstetter fan page on Facebook, and you can message me there or leave a comment. And then I have a friend page as well. And I try to respond to everything. I know I have an office assistant, and she comes in weekly. She's my granddaughter, actually. But I don't have her answer emails or private messages on Facebook because I feel that's impersonal. She doesn't know how I would respond. She could guess because she knows me fairly well, but she doesn't know exactly how I would. And I want to make that contact with readers. And if they have a prayer request, sometimes they'll ask me to pray for a certain thing. I want to know that. And I want to be able to pray for them and to minister to them. So it's not just about writing books. It's about ministering to people.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful to know. And it's such a blessing that there's a fullness to it, that it's not just about writing books, that it's about the community that's built within that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ms. Brunstetter, for your time. Thank you for sharing your story, your time, your experiences with us. Thank you for being with us here on the podcast. I really, really appreciate it so much.
You're so welcome. It was my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Christian Romance Book Club podcast, brought to you by familyfiction.com and hosted by Erica Rodriguez Well. Are you an author or publisher? Find out how to sponsor the show by emailing ross@familyfiction.com. Join our private book club group on Facebook. Become a member of our family at patreon.com/familyfiction. And subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. That's it for this episode of the Christian Romance Book Club podcast. We'll see you again next time.